again. This is episode two. At which point does it become a streak, I wonder? Welcome to our weekly live stream recording of the M&A Zing, a podcast series devoted to acquisition entrepreneurs, search funds, and holdco builders in the UK and the EU. Each week, we're diving into topics and challenges that impact SMB succession M&A and explore the highs and lows of searching, acquiring, owning, and operating small businesses. I'm Gareth Hawkins, and with me this week is our usual co-host going forward, Alfie Lambert, co-founder and head of growth at BizCrunch and our resident outreach expert. Hey, Alfie.
Hey, Gareth. Thanks for having me on for my first of many episodes.
Indeed. Yes, you're going to throw the bat on and then you'll never see me again. That's No, art of delegation, not.
You'll be here most weeks, I think.
Yeah, you try and get rid of me. Yeah. this is great. Thanks so much for those of you that engage with episode one on our YouTube. We will try and get episode two turned around super quick and onto our YouTube and into the community at pace now. So hopefully building up some sort of momentum and cadence. Alfie's been busily beavering away with the BizCrunch product, there's been lots happening behind the scenes, and I'm sure you'll all see the fruits of those labors very soon. What we typically do with this podcast is run 30 minutes of open sort of discussion around a topic that Alfie and I plus potentially future guests discuss, and then about half an hour after that, half an hour following that, we get into an AMA Q&A. So feel free to throw some messages into the chat, etc. So what's been happening this week, Alfie? What's been going on in the world of search and DTA, particularly in Europe and the UK? What can we celebrate for the viewers this week?
So the thing that I would like to pull out is the Novastone Capital Advisors entrepreneur Dean Curran completed the second acquisition in the UK, Active PCB Solutions Limited, which follows the previous acquisition of Gartner Osborne Circuits, Gartner on the brain. So creating the Agile Circuit Technology Group.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, Dean's building out his holdco. Dean's a great example of a very competent CEO who has had a career being a gun for hire CEO for others, who's then gone through the Novastone capital advisory process and effectively found very quickly his first acquisition target, which was Gartner Osborne Circuits last year. And then in hot on the heels of that has done his tuck-in add-on acquisition to build the group. So I wonder how many he's got up his sleeve. It's a great space. Mm-hmm. It's PCB assembly, which is one of these areas of the market that correlates with the sort of silver tsunami. You had all these guys in the 80s that, you know, in their primes were out there setting up these PCB and component companies. And mm-hmm. now, you know, here we are 30, 40 years later, and they're coming to the end of their careers and looking for their succession plan. So I think it's a really exciting time to be buying these kind of companies. And not to mention the fact, or not to overlook the fact, that there's a lot of repatriation, reshoring happening because, like, uncertainties around Taiwan and China. So I think he's got some real tailwinds there to drive that sector.
That's a really quick second acquisition, actually. So you said it was last year, so... what, 6-9 months ago? That's a super fast.
Yeah, it can't be longer than that. Yeah.
Credit to Dean. And that's really interesting, actually, because when we talk about buying legacy, you know, silver tsunami, boomerang businesses, you don't generally think of tech businesses, do you? That's not the first thing that comes to mind for me. But yeah, you think about the kind of first technology wave and home computing and circuitry and stuff from the 80s, then yeah, it's about time for that. It's really, really interesting buy there.
Yeah, I mean, you've been speaking about tech there. A lot of people conflate tech with like SaaS and software. And I don't know if ETA really works all that brilliantly for SaaS and software, because the multiples are normally of revenue rather than of profitability when you value those kinds of companies. But actually, if you want to go tech and you want like asset rich companies, because obviously the PCB assemblies have got quite a lot of hardware on the fixed asset book. Then yeah, it's a great space. I think he'll do really, really well, undoubtedly. So excited for him. What else has happened in Europe? Can't not mention Lineage. Lineage, the new fund of funds out of Germany, led by Carlo Schmid. This looks super exciting. This is a glimpse into the future. I think, because they're ahead of their time being a European fund of funds specifically focusing on search. Mm-hmm. Carlo knows well how to read the tea leaves. He was formerly at Merrill Lynch, and then he spent an epoch in venture, in the venture space. So he's seen the shift from kind of growth to value, and very sensible to be backing this space. So I hope he's the first of many in the German ecosystem.
Mm, fund of funds is interesting. Do we have much of that in the UK yet?
So we did have, I mean, Ethos Partners have done a bit, as an example fund of fund. Of course, we got 40 search partners, mm-hmm. Which is Tobias's sort of fund. That's that was saturated in minutes. Bless him. He went when Tobias went out and announced with great fanfare that he was out and allocating fairly quickly afterwards. I think less than 3 or 4 months, he was like, "Oh, we've got a lot of deal flow." So it speaks to the amount of activity in the space, and the sort of, as I said on my little kind of selfie on the way to the train station on Monday morning on LinkedIn, like it's just a real concentration of capital. It's not enough proliferation of capital in this space.
Yeah, which I think is something we'll get into with our sort of main topic on this conversation. That's kind of one of our key differences between us and the US, I think. But super exciting to see that there was so much uptake on Tobias's sort of venture when it went live, and that is encouraging. I do think that it's starting to grow, but like you said, we just need more.
Oh yes, yeah, it's never enough capital, unless of course you're in venture where they're all just sitting on a load of dry powder and not really allocating. So, but as I've said before, no one likes to catch a falling knife. So it's a different story in ETA where, you know, you've got this compressed multiples thing and this world of opportunity to drive upside. Mm. I guess in other news around Europe, INSEAD have stepped up their involvement in search funds in ETA. It's been a thing coming out of their executive courses for a while, and they have had an ETA society for a bit. But now they have a search fund, an ETA hub, which is co-led by Troy Hurrell and Jorge Rodriguez León. That's running a conference actually in May in Fontainebleau at their campus. So that's going to be really interesting. INSEAD alongside IESA from Spain are starting to become real forces, real proponents for ETA and search in Europe. They're spinning out lots of, you know, ambitious acquirers. Super cool.
That'd be a great event to go to.
Well, I'm thinking about making a trip. Yeah. Mm. Jumping on the Eurostar. Mm. Yeah, it'll be good. Try and get some tickets. If you're watching, Troy, we'd love some tickets. we'll do a live podcast. No problem. Just count us in. No, in all seriousness, absolutely. I think it's well worth the expense. So, and I'm sure I'll actually be oversubscribed if the truth be told. Last point of news, I guess we should get into before we go on to the main topic of today, is the report that's come out from Search Fund News in recent weeks about search fund acquisitions in 2024 and how they've identified 80 or more acquisitions that year, which is, I don't know if that's a record high, but it certainly is a consistent number. What is, of course, hugely obvious is that the USA continues to lead the pack with sort of 51% of those acquisitions all being done in the US. Europe is gaining a little at 30%, but of course you've got other geographies, other regions coming online now with ETA as a model. So it's kind of eating that lunch a little bit. So Asia Pacific is now 14% and LATAM is coming up the rear at 5%. So it's starting to get a bit more distributed, but it's still quite heavily nucleated in the USA space. I think we should probably explore why that is in a moment. But I guess as a quick precursor, given that we were just talking about INSEAD's get together for ETA in May, it's worth mentioning that MIT Sloan has their ETA summit and conference next month on the 28th in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the Sandberg Conference Center. That's going from the 27th of Feb to the 1st of March, a 3-day event. And it's got Will from Acquiring Minds doing some event hosting and comparing. So that's going to be pretty cool. Another great podcast to listen to, folks.
Yeah, I love Acquiring Minds.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? He really does go deep on these acquirer stories. In fact, the guy that he had on recently, this is getting a bit meta now because we're a podcast talking about a podcast, but he had a guy recently that was a flooring company that he'd made a 24x return in 3.5 years on his 200k that he went in with. Unbelievable. Just goes to show, right? What a poster boy.
24x, wow. Incredible.
24x is pretty cool, yeah?
Who needs SaaS?
Well, quite. Yeah, it's the magic money printing machine. Although, you know, he's got the war wounds to show for it. I think that was a pretty grueling 3.5 years from what the interview suggested.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the US obviously continues to lead the pack. 51% of all search fund acquisitions that took place last year, 2024, were still in the US. So they've got 40 years on the UK, right? They have been doing this since the 80s. We've only really just getting started, to quote Andrew Gazdecki. We're just getting started. The EU, like Spain particularly, maybe you've got a decade on us. They've been bullish on this for a while. Lots of family offices in and around the Madrid area and the IESA hub, you know, really being proponents of search. But because of that maturity of the US ecosystem, like there's a whole set of, I guess, support services that have sprung up around there. Let's talk a bit, I guess, about why it has become so prolific. It isn't just a function of time, surely. What do you think that the main driver is of uptake of ETA in the States?
I mean, I could tell you recently, I think the big difference between what they have in the US and what they have here is the kind of spread of knowledge. If you think about the fact that you have massive influencers talking about this to huge audiences, I mean, you know, the poster girl for this is Cody Sanchez, 1.7 million subscribers on YouTube. She has a goal to create 1 million business owners in the US. That's her kind of mission statement. But even, you know, social media influencers like Alex Hormozian, you know, there's a real spread of it, and it's going out to beyond your typical, you know, finance people. It's actually speaking to, you know, your average typical working American. And I do think business ownership and entrepreneurship is something that is more baked into American culture than maybe it is here. You know, that whole American dream is kind of quite synonymous with that entrepreneurship thing. So maybe there is something cultural to do with that. But yeah, it's absolutely exploded there. And I think it took a little bit longer to get to the stage that we are now. Like you said, they've been doing it since the 80s. And I think we can kind of use them as a jump off point. I think that kind of energy and enthusiasm and the learnings from the US is something that we can, hopefully it doesn't take us from, you know, 20 years as it has there to get to the levels it has. I think we're following, hopefully, closer behind than that.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. Cody's done a lot for the space, albeit the Puritans in search would say that, you know, her model is quite different and underplays some of the trials and tribulations of having to roll your sleeve up and run a company. It's not just buy a bunch of coin operated, you know, laundromats and sit back and wait for the cash to ride in. But yes, she has done wonders for the space. I think Walker Dybul with, you know, the OG with his buy and builds sort of manifesto, if you like, has become required reading for anybody that's getting into this. I think that awareness spreading amongst the authors and influencers has been super helpful, but we can't omit the fact that the business schools have been hugely prolific in propounding and proliferating the awareness of ETA. Like, you know, every month or every semester, it seems that another business school in the States has now got an ETA society and is teaching ETA courses and has, you know, an offer there. So that can't be coincidence, right? They must be getting on the back of an increasing movement still.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I read a couple of studies this week that came out of, I think it was Chicago Business School, you know, going back to the 90s, looking at search funds and ETA. And, you know, if you have been feeding that message out to, you know, execs and MBA students across the US for that amount of time, then yeah, it will take root. I think we are starting to follow here, though. I know that up until last year, it was mainly Oxford and Cambridge, I think, were the main two that had ETA courses, but I do think it's starting to spread now. I think we've spoken to a couple ourselves across
the UK. LBS was definitely there first, I think, in the UK.
LBS.
Simon Webster, the OG in the UK LBS came first, then I think Judge. Oxford are just really getting into it, but you know, you've got Warwick and Aston and others that are now starting to explore it. Obviously can't not mention Bayes, City University Bayes Business School. LSE, like it's growing. It's definitely growing over here. But like you mentioned, Chicago University, they've been around for ages. They were probably like third or fourth in the States getting into this space post Stanford and Harvard. The Polsky Center at Chicago U is really, really committed to the space and does a lot of entrepreneurship through acquisition, research, and publishing. And they've got, you know, some great contributions to the canon. So yeah, Polsky at Chicago U definitely is a good example. But then you've got Penn, you've got Dartmouth, you've got Columbia. It seems to be really out there amongst a lot of the major schools now. If you're going to do an exec kind of MBA or some kind of grad school in business there, you can't be ignorant to it, can you? It's pretty much slapping you in the face these days. ETA is an opportunity.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the UK is not too far behind. I think that it has started to spread more across the business schools in the UK over the last sort of year or so. I'm finding increasingly, you know, I speak to a lot of our BizCrunch customers all the time, and I find it increasingly that I'm speaking to people that have just come out the back of an MBA, that have been part of an ETA society at, you know, Judge or wherever it might be. And that's happening more and more often. I'm getting more of those conversations coming through. So I do think we are sort of riding that wave. And like I said, I think we're getting there a little bit faster than it was in the US. We're kind of benefiting from their experience and their time in the game.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's equivalent to Britain having taken 50 years to fully industrialize and China having done it in like 10. So I think we're owed one where we can sort of stand on the shoulders of giants and expeditiously get to a particular destination. And so I do think it's happening at pace, and everything happens faster these days, right? But what is really encouraging is to see these business school professors and like lecturers and heads of faculty offering the glimpse of the future for students into entrepreneurship, not just being the 0-1 kind of Peter Thiel tech route. You know, don't have to necessarily start when you can buy your way into entrepreneurship, and you can sort of, you know, cross that chasm and avoid those painful moments. You'll still get pain, but not quite the same pain as you have as an entrepreneur, right? I think this in and of itself is a great thing for entrepreneurs generally, because, you know, with the constriction of capital in venture, we don't really want to keep having the sausage factory churn out lots more, you know, tech founders when maybe there's an oversubscription there currently. So back to the States, before I, you know, get too carried away on my soapbox. We won't labour the point about the SBA 7A loan being the ultimate catalyst, but of course it plays a huge role.
Yeah.
As a consequence, though, the paradigm of the pre-qualified business, like the SBA pre-qualified process, that is a huge game changer, right? Because you've got companies being brought to market effectively with a loan scheme, with the leverage, with the funding required to for an entrepreneur to come along and take them over. Now, that is like delivered up on a plate, right? You've got the company that's gone through some preparation, and then it comes with a pre-funding. I mean, beautiful. We're miles behind that here. Couldn't we benefit from such a kind of partnership with a series of banks that go, yeah, these ones are good for X amount. Just go find the equity gap.
Absolutely. Actually, this brings me back to a point I was going to make earlier, that I think one of the big differences between sort of us and the US is that access to capital. I think that mainly in the US, they have more kind of risk appetite. You see that in venture. You know, if you look at startup funding, you know, cursory look at startup funding amounts in the US and the UK or EU shows that, you know, there's a lot more capital being deployed. But yeah, access in the UK is a real problem. And I do think if we had something similar to the SBA, I think it would really be a huge catalyst for us. I think the British Business Bank are starting to, obviously, you know, there's been new schemes coming out from them since the government changed. I think they are starting to move on that journey. There's still a long way to go, but But I think that this might be a kind of corollary thing. As more people come into ETA and more of the business schools talk about it and we're out here evangelizing and the movement starts to grow, I think that will help kind of put a bit more pressure on them to make this more attractive.
Oh, I think they're putting pressure on themselves.
I was going to say, not there should be any more pressure than the silver tsunami. You know, I think that it's a nationwide issue that I think they could solve quite easily and enable a new generation of entrepreneurs at the same time.
Yeah, but with the new mandate that the BBB have, you know, around infrastructure and around, you know, more sustainable investing, I think that impact case of keeping the economy going with that Mittelstand, you know, changing the generational wealth transfer piece, yeah. I think that falls firmly into their purview. And I have it apocryphally on reasonably good authority that senior bods at the BBB, as well as other funding conduits from, you know, government money into innovation economy have been tasked with looking at this. And I know it pretty much goes all the way to Jonathan Reynolds' desk one way or another. Like, I think wow. This is on the radar. So well worth watching the space to see whether it actually translates into new policy and new lending vehicles for this specific SMB microcap M&A market.
That is seriously exciting news if that does come to fruition. Yeah, I think that's one of our biggest stumbling blocks here. You know, we've got a handful of institutions that will lend for business acquisition. I think that's something that kind of hamstrings a few people early on. And I think, yeah, that could be a huge catalyst for ETA in the UK. And we need it.
Well, we do. But boxing a bit clever, not just making the funds available and saying, look, here's the product, and but more working with the lenders on particular, you know, exit opportunities. Wouldn't it be a wonderful paradigm shift if brokers, for example, and lenders were working in harmony to sort of pre-approve particular acquisition opportunities, so that all the entrepreneur had to do was come and find the cash component piece or negotiate the kind of deferred element with the seller. But yeah, you know, that would also give the seller more leverage as well, if you excuse the pun, but it would give them more ability to sort of say, no, I know what you can raise, and I'm only happy to do this much in deferred. So I think you're certainly seeing that trend in the States, a sort of a reasonableness in the approach by all stakeholders to go, yeah, this is the optimal funding structure for this acquisition.
Yeah, I think it would also, as you said, I think it would solve part of one of our biggest problems. I think one of the reasons deals fall down is that seller readiness. I think it kind of demystifies the process for them. It involves them from the start. They know how the process works. They know how to get their business ready for it. They'd have to go through the approval process, obviously. They know how much the buyers can borrow. They would understand more about the deal structuring. You know, this is where lots of people I speak to, their deals kind of fall down because sellers don't know any of this stuff until they get to this point in time. And actually it becomes a real sort of bone of contention. So that process would have the kind of financial institutions and the brokers doing some of that work for the buyer as well, you know, having that seller absolutely prepped and ready to go.
Yeah, couldn't have put it better. What a galvanizing event that would be to make sure the seller's in perfect alignment and readiness to sell. So I think there's work to be done there. But then, of course, it leaves the equity gap, and the equity gap is the piece that is missing. That's the cash component. Not every searcher has a wad of notes in their back pocket or a few hundred grand to drop into this to provide the cash component. And that does hold a number of people back. So the immaturity in the UK of being able to sell equity in the process, you know, every search fund, traditional or self-funded, is going through this similar kind of process to knock on the same doors and try and, you know, get access to the same support. So that pool needs to broaden. And what's now happened, you know, 40 years into the process in the States, you've now got, you know, if you like, SaaS platforms that are spun up specifically to try and solve this problem and almost like syndicate or align investors, co-investors with entrepreneurs that have opportunities to do a particular deal. So, you know, you've got Main Shares, which probably were the progenitor on this one. Capital Pad launched in the last, you know, couple of quarters. SMB Investor Network, it launched just literally in the last few weeks. You know, these are trying to do that for if you like, being a catalyst to bring more equity funding to where it's needed. We have nothing like that here in the UK, and it'd be great to play a role in that in some fashion.
Yeah, it would be. I think, I mean, this is a question for you. Do you think that we don't have much of that just because there hasn't been enough appetite for it? Do you think there's not enough equity funders in the space to warrant that kind of matchmaking service? What do you think is going down there?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's chicken and egg. So you've got lack of awareness. So in the States, there is, you know, prolific appetite amongst family offices. So there's at least 20 active family offices in the States right now that just pretty much purely invest, or primarily invest, in the search fund asset class, right? And they're investing in the US, and they're investing this side of the pond as well. And that's because it's mature and there's an awareness and people know about the 32% plus IRR and the sort of lucrative, what was it you were citing earlier?
The 2024 search fund study from Stanford indicates that the average return since 1986 for search funds in the US is 4.5x.
4.5x, there you go. In your face venture. That's not delivering those kind of terms.
Right, yeah.
So there's an awareness from those kind of studies, like the Stanford reports, that are fairly regularly saying this is lucrative. There's some experience investing and tangible returns. These family offices have seen some returns like that, so they've got an appetite to do more. And that in itself kind of spreads knowledge and awareness and desire for investors to go into it. Here, because, you know, the awareness isn't there, the investors aren't there, and you have to sort of step them both up, you know, raise awareness, raise pool of investors. You get some good success stories, which raises awareness and increases the pool of investors. And it feels like, in fact, I was talking to Al Zucker, a friend of mine, runs Ignition Law, and Brooke Mill, one of the sort of Holdco operations, great guy. But he was saying, this feels like venture felt 2 decades ago in the UK, right? Everything's kind of formalizing, but it's still kind of agile and everybody's learning their way. And, you know, you feel like it's a bit of an inside, you know, awareness. It's not publicly available information, you know, that kind of thing.
It feels like having one of the first pans at the gold rush.
Oh, great.
It's really exciting, and it feels like we're just at the kind of cusp of something huge. And again, you know, we can use America as the kind of model to look at and look at those 4.5x returns and the studies that are there and the societies that are popping up and all of those great things that's happening here. We've kind of got a little crystal ball into our future as we can look at the US and say, that's on the way here. And like I said, start the gold rush, I think.
Pans at the gold rush of ETA versus bedpans at the bedside of venture. Oops. Okay. So
we won't upset our friends in venture too much.
Well, no, of course not. No, definitely not. I think we need to probably just, it isn't all, you know, land of milk and honey. I think there's some things that get done better in Europe than get done in the States. And that's actually the means by which you can find these SMBs to buy, right? So very dependent on brokers in the States and, you know, good old fashioned door knocking and raiding the tax records, which are very disaggregated and at sort of local state office level. We're blessed in the UK with our registries. A lot of Europe has digital registries to find these companies. You know, tools like BizCrunch exist because, you know, we can access a lot of these data repositories to plug in and abstract those searches and make them much simpler, much quicker. But the States, it's really like hard, isn't it?
Yeah. One thing we do better in Europe than they do in the US is bureaucracy. And actually, it's been a real positive thing for, you know, for us getting this data at BizCrunch, but for, you know, all of the kind of search funds and the searches across Europe, because we do have really great, super accurate, easy to access records, which is the kind of foundation for especially off market. You know, as we know better than anybody, you need huge amounts of data, you know, to go through these searches to find that kind of needle in the haystack, that ideal business for you. And I think it's testament to the will of the American ETA community, because it must be so hard to search over there with the records that they have. Like you said, knocking on doors, tax records, you know, off market must be a real slog there. I mean, obviously, you know, someone can come in and improve that situation. It wasn't so easy here until recently, you know, especially at scale. But yeah, that's one thing that we do have on the US. And I think that we kind of have that data and that setup primed for, you know, someone like BizCrunch to come in and help you with that search. And then we see that proliferation of more search funds and ETA becomes more popular. And we kind of have that bedrock to build on, which is super useful.
No, it's really encouraging. There's not much standing in the way of the ETA movement in Europe now. I think a lot of the big challenges have been or are being knocked over. So yeah, it's an exciting time for the space. But good to know that there's still problems to solve in the massive US market for this. And you mentioned Cody earlier. Her kind of secret sauce is raid your supply chain. Talk to your customers, talk to your suppliers. Go to your country club, ask around, anybody got a business for sale? That sounds old school, right? That sounds like that's dying for digital disruption. So, cool. Well, listen, we've talked at length for a good, 20, 25 minutes on this topic, and I'm not sure we've got all the answers, but it's been an interesting exploration of the reasons that the US is further on than we are. But I am confident we can close the gap at a relative pace. It'll be good to see, the 2025 and 2026 reports as they come out and see if Europe accounts for closer to 50% of the deal volume. So what's coming up next week? We're getting into a groove now with these weekly 3:30 on a Friday, 3:30 on a Wednesday, not quite Friday yet, Gareth, sessions. So yeah, next week's, I think we're going to try and mix up a bit. We've got a potential interview talking about the business broker's journey. So that's cool. Nice to hear from the other side of the fence, if you will, because I know a lot of searchers do give business brokers a bit of a bad, a hard time, don't they? But there are some awesome ones out there. I can tell you that now.
Yeah, I think without brokers, we wouldn't be where we are now. I think there are some cowboys out there, as with every industry. But I think that the good brokers out there have been kind of powering what ETA we have had, in the last sort of decade or so. So it'd be really interesting. I'm super looking forward to that interview next week.
Yeah, here. No, the whole space needs good brokers, right? And I don't mean the sort of big floors of sales development reps that just want to sell you upfront listing fees and never actually help you sell your companies. I mean the proper boutique-y, like get hands on and really help brokers. Those are invaluable. So looking forward to hearing from one of them. And momentum continues to gather around the Serial Acquirer Symposium on the 18th of June, serialacquirer.uk. We are close to ending the early bird launch pricing. That's only going to run for another couple of weeks. So get in and save you 25% now on your day passes. But yeah, really interesting roster that I'm sworn to secrecy on one or two at the moment. But come the 1st of March, we'll be in a prime position to be able to announce exactly who's going to be on the speaker roster. And there's some really exciting topics and speakers coming up. Yeah. So, I'll contain my excitement for another day. But, we probably need to move to the Q&A session now, folks. So we'll wrap up this recording of this week's M&A Zing, and we'll see you in the AMA in just a second. Thanks for joining us. Keep on crunching. Go out and acquire.
Keep on crunching. We'll be right back.